May 25th, 2019 session of TeamSpeak for HPSDR. My name is Dave, KV0S. And this week, I went to Dayton last weekend, so it was an interesting event. Got to see a lot of old friends, meet some new ones, and had an enjoyable experience. Saw a lot of stuff, although I was busy recording a number of talks, and so I still have a number of videos to edit and get up on the web. So a busy week coming for me. So that's it for me. And next on the list, we have Greg, ZL3IX, shown as mic muted. And then we have Henry, PA0HJA, shown as recording in a way. And then we have Mike, AAAK, shown as recording and mic muted. And we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak sessions to teamspeakarchive.openhpsdr.org. Next, we have Phil, VK6PH. Go ahead, Phil.
Thanks very much, Dave. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Not much to report this week. Been doing some documentation updates related mainly to Protocol 1 and had some help from some of our users, which is greatly appreciated. So I'll be finalizing over the weekend and be posting that. Looking at what projects to work on next, the guys working on the envelope tracking and envelope elimination restoration amplifiers are moving ahead. The firmware I've developed for Hermes for that seems to be working fine, and they're getting some very good results and very good efficiencies, so that's going ahead. So just looking at what to start picking up on next for my next set of challenges. I'm glad you had a good and safe trip to Dayton, Dave, and I noticed reading the web during the week that Elicraft now have a SDR, which I wonder if you had a chance to look at that. That's about the news from down under, I'm afraid. Back to you, Dave.
I walked by there and looked at what they had, but Scotty had me in so many sessions recording that it took a while to get around to everything in between sessions, and so I didn't get a lot of time looking at everything. So next on the list, we have Bill, KD5TFD. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, guys. Yeah, no radio stuff for me this week, but happy to listen in on what's going on. Interested to hear what's going on, what you saw at Dayton there, Dave, and good to hear from you there, Phil. And, I guess I'll turn it back to both of you.
And the last one on the list is Bob, VE3GKM, shown as recording and mic muted, recording in a way, and that brings us to the end of the list, so we're open for general discussion.
What was the weather like there this year, Dave? I've been dating a few times where the weather's been not quite so good, but was it okay this year?
Well, it was actually warm. We had 80 degrees Fahrenheit, which is unusual, and we had rain each day, but luckily it was not in the middle of the day, so it was fine, but warm and humid, I guess I would say.
Oh, good. Oh, that's good. 80 degrees, that's a nice temperature for wandering around there.
Yep, and there were lots of people, so but this is my first time at the new venue, so it was disorienting because all the vendors were familiar, but I had to relearn where to look for each of the vendors.
Understood, yeah. Right, thanks.
There was a big presence of the HamSci guys, which is Nathan and Phil, two professors who are... Nathan was the one who worked on the tracking of the eclipse a few years ago, and Nathan runs the Haystack Observatory in Massachusetts and has started participating, and they and their graduate students were all running around in white lab coats trying to get younger people interested in radio and using radio for science.
Well, it's neat that the guy from Haystack actually, I think, was the keynote or the dinner speaker at DCC in Albuquerque last year, and good talk, and she had some interesting toys to play with there.
Yes, and he was also our AMSAT Tepper speaker as well, and he gave a talk in the session as well. So there were plenty of opportunities to hear about the things he's working on, and had some very nice images about how the Onosphere is changing in multiple dimensions. One that was surprising to me is they have been able to, when a tsunami came from Japan, they were able to detect the tsunami waves in the atmosphere.
Well, that's a surprising result.
Yeah, it was essentially they time correlated the measurements they were making, and these essentially what looked like waves, they were just fluctuations in the atmosphere, were in sync with the waves moving across the ocean.
Yeah, I guess that makes a certain amount of sense, because the floor is essentially going up and down, so it interesting.
How are they using radio to detect that, Dave?
A lot of what they're using is the GPS fixed point network, and then measuring, you get all those, they're used for differential correction kinds of things, and they use those to assess variation in a global sense.
Well, very interesting, thanks.
They also had a number of small projects that students did just to learn how to measure radio waves and use broad spectrum receivers and things like that.
So an interesting work talk during the week on time synchronization requirements for financial institutions, and sort of like, you know, time nuts for work.
Were they just as serious?
Yeah, actually, some of this was like, millisecond accuracy, which, you know, for time nuts isn't terribly interesting. But I guess some of the European stuff now is looking for granularity into the microsecond range for, I guess, some financial work, and for, you know, arrays of computers. This was all in how to do it for mainframes. This was a presentation from the hardware side of the house, and I work in the cloud side of the house, so I was thinking, Jesus, how the hell do I propagate this kind of accuracy into thousands of containers running around the system?
I could imagine. Well, in Scotty's new project, his Tangerine, one of the things that he wants to do is figure out how to make INQ packets and appropriately timestamp them.
Yeah, well, it is something to think about. I mean, they are actually, I think, the I think some folks have done some work on that for, very long baseline interferometry?
Yes, yes, that's exactly what you have to have for that. So there is a lot of different things, and so the debate is how much and where and how to interpret those results.
Yeah, I was just it struck me as the things are moving in different directions. You know, all the containers are trying to isolate you from the hardware, and when you're trying to get synchronization that close, all you could think is, boy, I'd really like to be a lot closer to the hardware.
Yes, that's right. And hopefully, if you have good timestamping, then once you have the good timestamping, this is Scotty's argument, is you do the timestamping in an FPGA and then do the processing with computers that are not so in such a hurry, because most of the time for this kind of data, you don't need to be physically listening to it.
Yeah, understood. Actually, a lot of this stuff is for audit and traceability requirements and stuff like that, but It was an interesting talk.
Yep. It's an interesting world and where things are going, and different projects that are being taken on by different groups and understanding. I ended up spending some time in the Tapper booth and got to talk to John Ackerman quite a bit about his interests, and of course, time stamping is high among those interests.
Yeah, that's for sure. Oh, well, and I also have to say a thank you on the mention on the Claude Shannon book, A Mind at Play. I got that a week and a half ago and started reading it and finding it a good book.
Well, while I was at Dayton, several people came up to me and thanked me for mentioning that book, and they'd already read it. So maybe... mentioning books on here is one of those things that increases at least a little bit the book sales.
So you got to set yourself up a little Amazon affiliate link, although I was actually thrilled to find that the Austin Library had it, so I got my copy from them. I'm trying to, if I have no empty bookcase space anymore, so I'm trying to avoid... buying books unless I absolutely positively want to have the book forever.
Well, is that one available in an e-book format?
It might be. I have yet to come to grips with... I will read e-books on an iPad or an Android box. I have yet to get a Kindle because I'm opposed to the DRM of the Kindles and just decided to... vote my conscience with my dollars.
Well, you have every right to do that, so there's no problem. I was just wondering, I had bought it in paper just because I was looking for it when I was at a paper bookstore, but I hadn't thought about trying to buy it the other way.
Well, checking Amazon, they do have it on a Kindle, and actually the Kindle is $12.99 and the hardcover is $27. So it, but yeah, one of these days, I may have to buckle and go with the Kindle. The iPad and the tablets, I find, I don't know, the reading on the backlight, they don't find it as enjoyable or stressful. The other problem with those devices is if you have me reading something where there's like a web browser or something on it, invariably I get distracted and, ADD sets in.
I know the distraction problem, so I would agree.
But it does get me accused of being a Luddite from time to time.
Well, Bill, we're of a certain age that we grew up, there wasn't such things.
I heard that problem with coworker. I decided to go out and get pizza for, split a pizza among coworkers, and one of the guys I work with doesn't believe in cash.
Ah, well, that makes it hard to split the cost.
Well, he bought me lunch today to make up for it, but he was like, well, do you do Venmo? And I said, Ven what?
Yeah, there's more and more of these pay your friends services.
I don't know. Carrying a little cash didn't seem that. I don't know. It was amusing that definitely a generational thing going on there. So you didn't happen to see the any of the new ICOM VHF UHF radio, did you?
I did walk through there and look at those, and I looked both the ICOM, and I looked through the Yaesu stuff. I did see the Elecraft. I was actually looking for Lyle to see if he was there, but I didn't see him. So I can't give you details about it, but I did walk through to look at those kinds of things. One of my big things was I have certain vendors I like to look at. I'm particularly interested in the things that PCB work on, because they're kits and they're reasonable price, and they play well with OpenHP SDR equipment, so I like to look at what they have. There are some other things that I generally pay attention to. A lot of the organizational booths paid attention to the Ham SI and the Tapper and QRP and those kinds of booths. And so those are the things that I generally spend my time looking at when I'm not in the Tapper booth.
Yeah, no, I understand that. The hobby PCB stuff is sort of interesting. I guess this is the SDR brought up to the VHF, UHF 1.2 gig stuff.
Yeah, I looked at it, but I didn't spend a lot of time in the booth or talking to the people. And so I had on Friday two sessions to record, and George Burkett had a very nice sound system and a very nice video camera. So he had me running the video camera, and it worked nicely. It recorded two tracks of sound in, and so I had one from the speaker's mic and one from the ambient, so I have lots to work with, as well as I got the actual slides from everybody, so I can put high-quality images on the screen when detail of the talk is on the screen. So that's what I'm going to be focusing on here in the next few days, is getting as many of those done as possible.
Cool. Well, appreciate it. Let's just do this Dayton thing vicariously.
Yep, you'll be able to see several things. I didn't do all the talks, but I did more than I expected when I first volunteered.
Funny how that works.
Yeah, thanks so much for doing that, Dave. Looking forward to viewing those videos. Thanks very much.
So you get this thing that, oh, yeah, you did that before. Could you do it again? And I said, well, okay. And then they said, well, could you do a couple extra forums? And I go, well, I guess so. You know how these things go.
So is school all done for the year for you, or do you do summer courses as well?
My regular school is done for the spring, but I have next week a one-week short course teaching people how to do forest inventory. And so that will take a huge amount of my time. It's 8 hours a day for a week, and that's next week. And then I have more flexible time during the summer.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I guess the short course sounds pretty intense, but after that you get a little breathing room, it sounds like.
After I've taught it now for about 26, 27 years, it changes, but doesn't change dramatically. Mostly I have to see what's new in GPS, because I do have to explain GPS to them, a little bit about space weather, a little bit about using the different kinds of measurement instruments, but how to read a map, that kind of stuff. And also go back and do compass and pacing as well.
Oh, see.
One fun exercise is I show them how to figure out what their local declination is and how much it's changed over time.
Declination being deviation of magnetic north from true north?
Correct, yes. And it's amazing how much it's moved in the last 100 years.
Really? I haven't heard. I'm amazed. So you use compasses and the like out in the wild due to lack of GPS coverage under forest canopy or other reasons?
That and, you know, it is a reliable tool that works most of the time, or all the time, if you know the limitations of it. So GPS have been moving into the process, but I still teach the traditional instruments as well. And when I was a Boy Scout, I learned that my declination was 5 degrees east here, and now it's almost exactly zero at this point in my career.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I was going to say, I learned the compass and magnetic, you know, orienteering stuff in the scouts years and years ago. And actually, it's funny, one of the local camps we had used to be, or was in the area of some old iron mines, and around there you could get some really weird results in parts of the camp, but I didn't think anybody did that stuff anymore.
Yep, they do, and it can't be useful unless you're standing on top of an iron mine, obviously. There are all these local magnetic anomalies all over the place that you have to be aware of. But I also try to remind people that if you're in Portland, Maine, or Portland, Oregon, you know, it can be as much as 16 degrees off of true north, either east or west, depending on which one of those places you are.
Yeah, it, that is pretty neat stuff. But, but yeah, God, I haven't done that. And somewhere around here, I must still have a compass.
Well, field people often use things. The one thing about a lot of forestry companies is they're somewhat cheap about buying lots of equipment for field people. So some people get the nice laser equipment and the GPSs and all, and then others don't.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
I actually use a little ham radio knowledge in pointing out that they should check the space weather sites to know whether there's a magnetic storm, and using a GPS and a magnetic storm is not a good idea either.
Yeah, I've actually, sometime last week or so, I saw somebody saying that we were having a space weather event and it was likely to affect GPS, and I have yet to see, though, the moving map in my car get confused.
Yeah, it may be also using some of the cell information as well, but because if it's coming from the satellites, it can be affected by the geomagnetic storms, but the really bad ones are fairly rare. We haven't had any really huge ones for many years, but we might see some in the next few years again. Who knows?
Yeah, and I remember one a few years back. I was playing a lot of digital modes back then, and God, everything sounded just so off, and God, PSK wouldn't decode worth a damn. But it was funny. PSK was a mess, I guess, because whatever the disturbance was causing all sorts of phase issues, and MFSK, though, went through like a champ.
Yep, and that's one of the interesting things to know is each of those is sensitive to certain of the aspects of the signal, and so if you're using the right mode, you can be less bothered by the disturbance, or if you use the wrong mode, you're more bothered by the disturbance.
This is true.
I tend to teach my students to not depend on anything being fail-safe.
Good luck with that.